Before we go on to talk over what we have been talking last four talks, one has been wondering, and you must also have been asking yourself, why we who have gathered here, who have listened for so many years, why don't we change? What is the root cause of it? Is there one cause or many causes? We know what the world has become outwardly. More and more fragmented, more and more violent, more insane, one group fighting another group, where one cannot share all the energy of the world for all people. You know what is happening? And what is our relationship to that? To the world and to oneself. Are we separate from all that? If we are, which I question, if we are we so very radically different from the world about us? The competing gurus, the competing religions, the contradictory opposing ideas and so on. What shall we do? Together, to change ourselves. And I'm asking this in all seriousness. Why we lead the way our lives as we live, our petty little ideals, vanities, and all these stupidities that we have accumulated. Why is it we go on this way? Is it we are frightened to change? Is it we have no desire or intention or urge to find a different way of living? Please ask yourself these questions. I'm asking these questions for you. I'm not asking for myself. Why? What is the essence of this deterioration of the human mind? And therefore, the disintegration in action. Why is there this mind that has become so small, inclusive, not bringing everything and operating from the whole, but living in a small little courtyard, What is the root of it? Go on, sirs, think it. Let us talk it over a little bit. The other day, you're asking, why is it that I have heard you for 52 or 40 years and I have not changed at all? There have been little changes, modifications. Perhaps I'm no longer a nationalist, no longer belongs to any particular organized group of religious thinking, doesn't superficially belong to any sect, to any guru, to any all that circus that goes on. But deeply, one remains more or less the same. Perhaps more refined, the self-centeredness is little less active, less aggressive, more refined, more yielding, little more considerate, but the root remains. Have you noticed this? Why? We are talking about the eradication of that root, not the peripheral frills and the peripheral clipping. We are talking about the very root of one's active, conscious or unconscious egocentricism. Is it because we need time? Please go into it. Time. Let give me time. Man has existed for millions and millions of years. That root has not been uprooted and put aside. Time has not solved it. Right? Please give your mind to this. Evolution, which is the movement of time, has not solved this. We have better bathrooms, more better communications, and so on and so on. But man, the human being, is essentially what he has been a million years ago. It's a tragic thing if one realizes it. And if one is serious, not just while you are here in this tent, serious right through your life, your daily life, don't you ever ask, can this self-centered activity with all its problems can ever end? If you asked it seriously, and if one realizes time, thought, we went into it the other day. Time and thought are similar. They are the same movement. And thought and time have not solved this problem. And that's the only instrument we have. And we never seem to realize that instrument, which is the movement of thought, however limited, that movement cannot solve the problems. And yet we hold on to them. We hold on to the old instrument. Right? Thought has created all these problems. Right? That's obvious. Problems of nationality, problems which war creates, problems of religions. All that is the movement of thought which is limited. And that very thought has created this center. Right? Obviously. And yet, we don't seem to be able to find a new instrument. Right? We don't find a new instrument. But as we cannot let go the old instrument, and holding on to it, we hope to find the new. You follow it? You must let go something to find the new. Right? If you see a path leading up to the top of the mountain that doesn't lead you up there, you investigate. You don't stick to that path. So when asked, what is it, why is it that human beings are so incredibly stupid? They have wars, they have this fragmentation of nationalities, religions, all the rest of it. And yet they live in this miserable, unhappy, quarreling, conflict, strife. You follow? Now, what will make a human being let go of the old instrument and look for the new? You understand? Look for the new. Is it that we are lazy? Is it that we are frightened? Is it, if I let go this, will you guarantee the other? You understand? Which means one has lived with this limited thought, and one thinks one has found security in there and is afraid to let that go, and it's only when there is abandonment of the old you can find the new. You obviously. So is it, we're asking, is it fear? Because you observe the multiplication of gurus all over the world guaranteeing security. Do this, follow this, practice this, and you will have something at the end of it. That is, reward. The promise of a reward has a certain fascination, and the hope you will find in that security. But when you examine it a little more closely, and not so gullible, not swallow the whole thing, the other fellow says, then you find very clearly that the reward is the reaction of punishment. You know? Because we are trained to the idea of reward and punishment. Right? It's obvious. So when to escape from punishment, which means pain, grief and all that, we search a reward and hope thereby in that to find some kind of security, some kind of peace, some kind of happiness. But when you go into it, you don't find it. The gurus and the priests may promise it, but they're just words, right? So, how do we, human beings, go into this question together, whether it is possible to eradicate totally this poisonous self-interest, self-centered activity? Right? I do not know if you ever asked even that question. When you do ask that question, you have already begun to be a little more intelligent. Naturally. So we are going this morning together, think this problem over. Together. Thinking together. Not I tell you and you accept or reject, but together find out if this movement of the ego, the self, can ever end. Right? Are you interested in this? No, no, don't say nod your heads. This is a very serious problem. You may be stimulated while you are in the tent by the speaker, and I hope you are not. But you may be stimulated and therefore rather excited and say, yes, I agree with you, we must do this. And when you leave the tent, you forget all about it and carry on in your old ways. So, together, you, putting aside your particular prejudice, your particular gurus, your particular conclusions, together, we are going to investigate this question. To investigate, you must be free. Right? It's obvious, isn't it? You must be free to examine. You must be free from those blocks which impede your examination. The impediments are your prejudice, your experience, your own knowledge or other people's knowledge. All those act as impediments. And then you cannot possibly have the capacity to examine or think together. Right? At least intellectually see this. The speaker has none of these problems. He has no prejudice, no belief. I finished. Only then we can meet together. If you are also in that same position. So let us examine, think over, think together. We think together over this question, why human beings right throughout the world have remained self-centered, knowing all the problems it entails, knowing all the confusion, misery, sorrow it involves, they hold on to it. Right? Now we're asking, is it desire? You know what desire is? We are asking, is it the root of this self-centered activity, desire? What is desire? We all desire so many things. Desire for enlightenment. Desire for happiness. Desire for good looks. Desire for what? A world that will be peaceful. Desire to fulfill and avoid frustration. You know, desire by which all human beings are driven. Do you follow this? We are asking, is that one of the root causes of this self-centered existence with all its confusion and misery? And religions throughout the world have said you must suppress desire. Right? You must become a monk in the service of God, and to attain that supreme thing, you must have no desire. You understand? This has been the constant repetition of all the so-called religious people in the world. And without understanding what is the structure and nature of desire, they have had this ideal that to serve the highest principle, Brahman in India, God or Christ in this world, in the Christian world, or other forms of religious sectarian nonsense, suppress, control, dominate desire. Right? Now, we together are going to look into what is desire. Now, when you examine what is desire, please listen carefully. When you examine what is desire or analyze, you are using thought as a means of analysis. That is, going into the past You're following this? And so you are using the old instrument, which is limited thought, and looking into the past, step by step, which is the whole psychoanalytical process. You're following all this? But to examine desire, you must see the actuality of it, not step it back. You understand what I'm saying? Please, come with me a little bit. You must be very clear on this point. The psychoanalytical, introspective, self-examination process is going backwards and thereby hoping to find the cause. Right? To do that, you employ thought. Right? And thought is limited, the old instrument, and you are using the old instrument to find the root of desire. Now we are saying something entirely different. Please give little attention to this. We are saying analysis by oneself or by the professional doesn't lead anywhere. Unless you're slightly neurotic and all the rest of them, that may be little helpful. Perhaps we're all slightly neurotic. We are saying, observe the nature of desire. Don't analyze, just observe. You understand the difference? Is this clear? I'm going to show it to you. See? Must everything be explained? Which is too bad. You don't jump to it and say, yes, I've got it. All that you say is, explain and I will get it. Explain the whole. Explain the whole. The whole movement of desire, employ the words, correct words, describe it precisely, and I'll get it. What you get is the clarity of explanation, clarity of words. But that doesn't give you the total observation of the movement of desire. You got this? So can you stop analyzing, but just observe? You have got, are we meeting each other? One can describe the beauty of the mountain, the white snow, the blue sky, the marvelous dignity of the, and the glory of it, the valleys, the rivers, the streams, the flowers. And most of us are satisfied with the explanations. We don't say, I'll go, get up, climb and find out. We are going to this question of desire very carefully, not the movement of tracing it back and thereby hoping to find the nature of desire, but actively together look at it. What is desire? Look at it yourself. Together we are doing it. What is desire? You desire a dress, which you see in the window. And there is a response. You like the color, the shape, the fashion. And desire says, let me go and buy it. So what has taken place actually at that moment? Which is not analysis, but actually observing the reaction to the seeing of that dress in the window and the response to that. You're following this? Yes? You're following this? Don't go to sleep, please. You see that dress, you like the color, you like the fashion. What has taken place there? You observe, there's the sensation, right? Then, yes, there is contact, you touch it. Then, desire arises through the image you have, which thought has built, you putting on that dress. Right? You understand this? Seeing, sensation, contact, then thought, imagining that dress on you, and then desire. You follow this? No, not follow me. The fact of it. I've only given an explanation, the words. But the actual response, we are talking, the actual response, the seeing, contact, sensation, thought, imagining that dress on you, and desire is born. You understand? Have you got this? No. Yours, not mine. Now, follow this carefully. The moment thought creates the image, from that image, desire is born. Right? You understand this? Please understand this. Oh, I'm dying. I'm bored with explanations. I'll stick to that dress or the shirt. You see that in there's perception of that in the window, the seeing, the visual, optic response. Then go inside, touch the material. Then thought says, how nice it would be if I had it. And imagine that you are wearing it. That is the moment of desire. Right? Do you see this? Actually, not my explanation, and through the explanations you see. Is it clear? That you yourself observe the happening. Now the question is, please go into carefully. Why does thought create the image? You having that shirt, that dress, and then pursuing it. Watch it. Think it out. Go into it. Exercise your brains. One sees a blue shirt. Then you see it, go and touch it, feel the material. Then thought comes and says, how nice. Now, the question is, can thought abstain itself from creating the image? You understand my question? I'll explain. I'll go into it. We are examining the whole movement of desire. Because we're asking, is desire the very root of the self-centered, egotistic existence? And from that we're asking, is it desire? And then we say, what is desire? And the speaker is totally opposed to suppression. Because that doesn't solve the problem. Totally, say, don't run away from it. Into a monastery, into taking vows and all kinds of things. That's merely avoidance. But what we are saying is, examine it, look at it. Not analytically, but as it is taking place. Observe. The observation shows the optic response to the blue dress, blue shirt, the contact inside, going to the shop, touching the material. Then thought creates the image and desire is born. It's only when thought creates the image, desire comes into being. Otherwise it does not. Are you now together in this? Right? So desire comes into being and flowers the moment you create the image. Thought creates the image. You have had a pleasant experience, sexual or whatever you have. And it has created an image, a picture, and you pursue it. One is a form of pleasure. The other is the movement of contradictory desires. Right? You desire that dress one and then or desire great success, and so on and on and on. Now, can you observe this fact that the moment when thought creates the image, desire is born? Are you aware of this? Do you see actually as it happens how thought creates through its image, through its imagination, the desire to pursue the very end? Right? Do you actually now sitting there observe this fact for yourself? Obviously, it's very simple. Right? The question arises then, can thought not create the image? That's the whole point. You understand? Am I making this terribly difficult? Huh? Just a minute, sir. Let me finish and then we can carry on off. May I finish? May I finish what I'm saying? And then you can ask questions if there's time. And we have 5 discussions after the talks are over. Then you can bully me. So till then, have patience. We have come to the point when you yourself observe the springing of desire. Right? Perception, seeing, contact, sensation. Up to there, there's no desire. It's just a reaction. You follow? But the moment thought creates the image, the whole cycle begins. Is this? Do you see this? If you see it clearly, then the question arises, why does thought always create this image? You understand? Why? You see a shirt, red, blue, white, whatever it is, instantly like and dislike, which is the thought, has its previous experiences, liking and so on. So, can you observe the blue shirt, dress in the window, and realize the nature of thought and see that the moment when thought comes in, the problem begins? Not only blue shirt or dress, your sex, your sexual experiences, the image, the pictures, the thinking over, or the image that you have of a position, a status, a function. So desire is that. So can you observe without the inflaming desire coming to being? You understand my question? Go into it. You will see. You can do it. That is the new instrument, which is to observe. Then, does desire for security for the same thing? Security in terms of big house, little house, bank account, which may be necessary. And also security, desire is created about oneself. The image that you have about yourself. And the fulfillment of that image in action. In that is involved many kinds of frustrations. And in spite of the frustrations, in spite of conflicts, misery, desire pursues. Because thought is always creating the image where there is sensation involved. Right? I wonder if you see this. So, we're asking then, the next question is desire responsible for fear? We have sought security through desire and the fulfillment of that desire in God, in what psychologically, I don't want to go on and on about this beastly stuff. And unconsciously, deeply, one may be aware that the things in which you have invested, desire has invested, have no value at all. And having no value, then you're frightened. Are you following this? Because, again, we are not analyzing fear. That's a stupid old game. We are observing the actual fact of fear. And as it arises, to observe, ask, what is the root of it? Not analytically discover the root of it. But in the very observation of it, you discover the root. You get it? Are you following on this? Huh? Are you mad? You seem rather doubtful. I'm going to go into this. Man has accepted and lived with fear, both outwardly and inwardly. Fear of violence, fear of physically getting hurt, and so on, outwardly. Psychologically, fear of not conforming to a pattern, fear of public opinion, fear of not achieving, not fulfilling, and so on, you know, psychologically. We are asking, which is a fact, can you observe that fact without the analytical mind operating on the fact and observe the whole movement of fear as it exists? You understand? or getting tired, 10 minutes more, bear up with it. Because you see, it is possible to be absolutely psychologically free of fear. Absolutely. Don't accept my word for it. Your life is not mine, yours. You have to find this out. So you have to ask, what is fear? Has its roots in desire? Go into it slowly, don't say no. Go into it. Desire being what we have said. Thought creating the image and then pursuing that image and might fulfill, might not. You follow? If it fulfills, there is no fear. Or at least there are other calamities involved in it. But when there is no fulfillment, there is frustration. And the fear of not being able to fulfill. You understand? I mean, this whole complex sexual fulfillment, which apparently the world is now just discovering it and making a lot of noise about it. Promiscuous and all the rest of it. So we are asking, is fear the product of desire? Desire being the image formation and the fulfillment of that image in action. Right? Or is fear, please follow this care, part of time. You see? Is fear the movement of time? So has desire and time, are desire and time responsible for fear? You understand? Oh my Lord. Huh? I'll explain. Go slow. Desire is the movement of thought with its imagery. That is the movement of thought creating the image and the movement of that image. Which is time. Right? No? Psychological time. And we are asking, is time responsible also for fear? The time of desire, I'm getting it. You get it? The time which desire creates and thought which has created the desire is, and thought being also time, so thought and desire are responsible for fear. Huh? You see that? I am afraid what you might do to me. I am afraid you might hurt me psychologically. I am afraid that dog will bite me. But at the moment of biting, Time has come to an end. You understand? It is only the dog might bite me. I have created the image, thought has created the image, that thought biting, which is time, in the future. You're following on this? So desire has its future, and time is naturally future. The past, present, and future. So the question is, can thought realize its own movement, creating fear? You understand? Thought realizing its own nature. When it realizes its own nature as the active principle in fear, what takes place? There is only then what is actually happening. I wonder if you see that. Do please come. Because it would be worthwhile if we could think together about this matter. That then you would leave the tent without having understood the movement of fear and realizing the nature of desire and the nature of limited thought, creating time, which is fear. You understand? Do you realize it, or have you merely accepted the words? You understand? If you realize it, the thing is over. There are no gurus, no God, all that nonsense. No. Thought, it's not a question of thought stopping. No. Don't say thought. That we'll discuss that a little later when we talk about meditation, or if you are interested. But that's not the point. I am saying, does thought itself realize what it is doing? That it has created the desire, and the fulfillment of the desire is time. And in that is involved fear. And also, thought has created what might happen. There's been pain. I hope you won't there won't be pain again, which is in the future. So, thought has created the future, right? And the future is the very nature of fear. I wonder if you got it. Look, sir, if I die instantly, there's no fear. If I have an immediate heart attack, gone, there's no fear. But my heart is weak, I might die, which is the future. The future is the movement of fear. Get it? See the truth of it, not your conclusion. Not your saying, yes, I see it. The truth of it. Then that very truth operates. You don't have to do a thing. If you see that truth, And that truth being a fact, then thought says, all right, I've finished. You can't, thought cannot operate on a fact. It can operate on something non-fact. So, can you, after having listened to this verbiage, have you realized the nature of fear? See the truth of it. If you really see the truth of it, fear has gone. It's not that you control thought. You are the thought. You understand? This is one of our peculiar conditioning, that you are different from thought. And therefore you say, I'll control thought. But when you realize that thought itself is the me, and that thought has created this future, which is fear, and see the truth of it, not intellectually see the, you can't see the truth intellectually. You can see intellectually the clear verbal explanation, but that's not the truth. The truth is the fact that the future, whole movement of the future, is giving birth to fear. Now, you have listened to this, perhaps in different ways, and different explanations on different occasions, and you are gathered here again, and you have listened this morning to a very clear explanation, which is not analysis, and are you free of fear? That is the test. You are still carrying on, say, I'm afraid of, you know, all the rest of that business. Then you haven't really listened. May we continue with this on Thursday, day after tomorrow morning. May we